How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. 2 hours of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and quite the packed weekend we have here as we near the end of 2012 and perhaps the end of the world. The Mayans are correct. We've got UFC Ultimate Fighter Finale, which took place Friday night. The Australian version, The Smashes. We'll talk a little bit about that show, as well as last night's Ultimate Fighter Finale, the U.S. version. Originally scheduled to be Roy Nelson versus Shane Carwin. Shane Carwin injured his knee and was subsequently replaced by Matt Mitrione. We'll tell you all about both those shows. A lot of good fights on the shows. A lot of good finishes. Not really marquee lineups, as was the case with Seattle last weekend. But the fights that we did get were some pretty darn good fights. So we're going to talk about all of that. Going to talk a little bit about the ROH show, the iPay-per-view taking place today. We'll give you some results of that show. It's taking place earlier today, actually. And so no real preview for the ROH show. However, we will preview the WWE TLC pay-per-view. For those of you that are ready for some tables, ladders, and chairs, that show takes place tonight. Got a bunch of matches signed, including a main event with, amazingly, no title on the line. The only championship match, World or WWE, is actually the Big Show Sheamus Chairs match, which appears to be taking place third from the top. Which should tell you a little bit about that title belt and its importance in WWE. But we got two matches headlining above that, John Cena and Dolph Ziggler for the title. Not to mention the Shield against Ryback, Daniel Bryan and Kane in a TLC match. Pinfall or submission only. We're going to preview all of those matches here on the show. Plus, obviously, talk what we talk about every week. The SmackDown show, Impact, Raw, preview for next week, preview for some of the big shows coming up at the end of the year, and some previews for 2013. We got so much stuff to talk about on the program. No time to waste. Head to our first commercial break. When we come back, we are off to the races. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and we have so much to talk about today on a four-big show weekend. UFC in Australia, the Ultimate Fighter Finale of the Smashes, UFC Ultimate Fighter Finale U.S. version, Saturday night, Roy Nelson against Matt Mitrione. We've got the ROHI pay-per-view today, plus the TLC show. And Mike, are you prepared for what is to come today? Actually, I know you're not, because off the air, before the show started, you had forgotten today was TLC.
Hey, I was just happy with the Atlanta Falcons actually doing something today and winning that, so all of my concentration went to that. And I was going to gather myself up after football was all over with and really get prepared to watch dueling pay-per-views, the Final Battle Eye pay-per-view as well as TLC.
WWE TLC pay-per-view. It is the final WWE pay-per-view of the year. CM Punk is not on the pay-per-view. He suffered a knee injury. He is out until early 2013. He had his knee scoped. He was scheduled to come back next week, but they decided we'll give him an extra week off to make sure he's ready. He's off of the big post-Christmas house show swing, which is one of the most lucrative of the year since everybody buys their kids WWE house show tickets for Christmas presents. But he'll be back and ready to go in January, and he'll be facing The Rock, obviously, at the Royal Rumble. Now, there has been talk that since he was scheduled to face Ryback at this pay-per-view, Vince McMahon even said that the Ryback match would take place at some point prior to the Royal Rumble. I don't know if there's a good day to do that match. Obviously, there's holiday Raws. There's big football games going head-to-head near the as we head into the Super Bowl weekend, actually. Regular season football is about to end, but still a few games left, and not a good time to go head-to-head with a Ryback match. So, in your opinion, should they even bother, or should they just drop that whole idea?
You know, I don't necessarily think they should bother unless they tie something into it tonight with you know, him wanting a shot at Paul Heyman or something like that, and that meaning Ryback and that. But me personally, I wouldn't really. I know that, you don't want to hurt Ryback and you want him to get his revenge on Punk. And at some point, you can do that and have that happen, but I don't really see a need with this being the last pay-per-view of the year. We're ramping up for Punk and Rock and the Royal Rumble and then the lead-in going into WrestleMania. So I don't see a need to do something like that, although you could do something like that down the line leading into the Royal Rumble on a Raw. I just don't think they should go out of their way to really think about it.
Yeah, Paul Heyman actually is going to be facing Ryback. He is replacing John Cena in all of those post-Christmas house show matches, including Madison Square Garden. There's actually going to be a Ryback versus Paul Heyman singles match. So in all the years he's been in this business as a New Yorker, this will be the first time that Paul Heyman has ever wrestled a singles match in Madison Square Garden. Unless, of course,
there's a reason for that, you know.
Replace him.
Not exactly a physical wonderment. I had enough of seeing Paul Heyman in a ring when I saw him get slapped around by Missy Hyatt and Jim Cornette way back when. So, then maybe we'll see this some Shield interference or something like that. But something tells me they'll have to do more than just have Ryback beat up Paulie in Madison Square Garden.
All right, let's look at the TLC pay-per-view. We'll go from top to bottom here. Get the big matches out of the way first. Obviously, it is Team Hell No, Daniel Bryan and Kane, and Ryback against The Shield. Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns in a TLC match, main event, pinfall or submission only is the way to win. They're not hanging anything from the ceiling. So it's just a hardcore match, basically. And I love the idea that we've got a ladder match, but there's nothing hanging from the ceiling. So guys may just decide to climb a ladder for the hell of it here in this match, apparently. And that's the main event. Most people expect that either Daniel Bryan or Kane will drop the fall. Certainly will not be Ryback. And often when I say certainly, I look like an idiot, but not in this case. They're not beating Ryback in this match. I mean, they're just not. If they are, there probably isn't going to be a Wrestling Observer Live next week because the business just completely collapses. No. Won't be that bad, but I can't imagine him beating Ryback three straight pay-per-views. So you got two other guys that can do a job there. I don't think you should beat The Shield their first match in. I think they've done, actually, to me, an exceptional job with The Shield. You know all three guys. They've all got a chance to talk, which is very important in 2012 for your WWE audience. If guys don't talk, they're geeks. If guys talk, people seem to think that they matter. And they've all had a chance to cut promos. You're going to see them in a match. Seth Rollins is very good. Dean Ambrose is very good. Roman Reigns, very green, but you can protect him in a match such as this. And I think it's going to be pretty good. It's a big night for The Shield. And hopefully they can pull it off.
Yeah, this show's going to test the idea, the mantra that WWE loves to send people home happy, because when you look up and down the card, you, in theory, to me at least, it sticks out that most of the heels should win on this show. With no bigger example of that being the main event with The Shield, you've got to establish them and get them off on the right foot with a win. And having Daniel Bryan and Kane in there, obviously you can go over either guy. Kane's been established for so long, and he's almost Teflon as far as people's reaction. I mean, as long as you give him something, they're going to get back into him. So I can see him getting pinned, but only if it's, you know, they do something in a three-man move and Roman Reigns gets the win. Otherwise, Daniel Bryan's the guy to be the sacrificial lamb there. He's still going to be over no matter what. He's the smallest of the bunch as far as, you know, the perception of doing something to him and getting some sympathy out of it and some more heat onto The Shield. So, yeah, this is a no-brainer to me that The Shield has got to go over here. It doesn't matter which one gets the win, although I guess you would have your monster either doing Roman Reigns or having Seth Rollins, who's by far the best worker of the three. But no matter who it is, they're the ones who've got to get the pin here. And it's hard to imagine, even though WWE screwed up so many things and we think they're going to zig and they zag and it doesn't really make much sense to, why in the world, if The Shield doesn't go over, again, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, because even some sort of banana peel finish or something like that, or something really even cool that Ryback does power-wise or something like that, in the long run would be just a incredible, incredible mistake. And forget about the long run. In the short term, that would happen if The Shield doesn't win.
Well, he can always beat him afterwards. You always do a. You can always do a deal where Daniel Bryan gets pinned, or if it's me, I'd beat Kane. Actually, it's a bigger and more impressive guy physically, and have the Shield beat him, put him through a table or something like that, off a ladder. I don't know, but you beat him. Ryback is outside the ring or whatever, and after that, you got all three guys beating on Daniel Bryan and Kane, 3-on-2. And then Ryback runs back in, and two of the Shield members get away. One doesn't, and whichever one that is, probably I'd use Seth Rollins. He's a great worker. He can overcome it. You have Ryback absolutely destroy him. So the Shield won, and it's not like you you completely negated the finish by beating all of them up. Two of them still got away, but one guy takes a bullet. So I think that that's the easiest finish. Send the crowd home happy with Ryback putting some dude through a table or something, and everybody goes home happy. So that's my that's what I would do, and I guess we'll see tonight what they decide to do. Also on the show, second from the top, it is Dolph Ziggler and John Cena ladder match. Ziggler's Money in the Bank contract is on the line, and John Cena's beat up, banged up. He's got far more injuries than they let on, lingering injuries. I don't know how much longer the guy can go. I'm not saying he's going to retire like next year or anything like that, but it's catching up to him. So hopefully he doesn't do a lot of falling off ladders. Ziggler obviously will. He's determined to shorten his career as much as possible. And the question remains, who leaves with the briefcase? You've got a number of options. You could have John Cena win, and then he uses it to cash in on The Rock after The Rock beats CM Punk at the Royal Rumble. Or you could do a switcheroo, and Ziggler retains the briefcase, finally gets a big win over John Cena, and that helps catapult Ziggler up another notch. If you were putting together, Mike, just very briefly, what's your pick for a winner? And after we come back from the break, we'll discuss it.
I would probably go with Dolph Ziggler in this. That's what I would hope.
Dolph Ziggler retaining. All right, we'll discuss that when we come back from the break. After that, we've got five other matches here to preview on the show, including a free match on YouTube, Santa's Little Helper Battle Royal, which already has had a change of plans, believe it or not. All that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also hear the show every Sunday with the TuneIn Radio app, which you can download for your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app, and you search for Sports Byline USA and stream this show and all of the great Sports Byline radio programming live through your phone. You can hook it up to your car as well, listen to it as you drive. A lot of options, including you can go back and listen to past episodes of the show, I believe, on the app as well. So check it out, TuneIn Radio app. We're talking the WWE TLC pay-per-view, which is coming up moments after the show goes off the air. In the middle of this preview, Dolph Ziggler, John Cena for the briefcase. Mike is voting. Dolph Ziggler retains the briefcase. Mike, tell us why.
Well, you know, they've already, I guess one could say they tipped their hand. They had John Cena beat Dolph Ziggler 2 weeks ago in a finish that didn't seem to make any sense whatsoever. They'd been pushing Dolph, you know, kind of back up. It looked like a little bit of rehab from how they've been beating him. And then he loses to Cena, and we were wondering why. And that's why I could see, you know, ultimately, Cena, Ziggler winning this. They've already, you know, they're big on this 50-50 thing, and God knows they got to have Cena, you know, get the Duke over everybody, including Brock Lesnar when he came back. Even though the match was great and they did a good job telling the story they were going to tell, it's not exactly the ending of the story that I think most people really wanted. And Cena now beating Ziggler, it makes sense then. Ziggler can win here. Again, will they do that? I don't know. I mean, they've been beating Ziggler nonstop, and you know, the whole Money in the Bank, you know, contract as a prop has meant nothing with the way Ziggler's been beaten and how he's been treated. And he needs better. He really does need better, regardless of Cena already getting a win over him in the first place. They need stars. You know, Orton's out. They had that time with Cena being out. And Sheamus is coming along. They do have CM Punk, but, you know, Punk's hurt too, and it was a reminder of how thin the roster is. And Dolph Ziggler is a guy that they should be building around, and he's going to need he needs rehab work anyway, win or lose here. He definitely needs rehab work, but a win over John Cena would go, you know, at least a long way in setting that up. Whether that happens or not, you know, who knows, but he's been completely, you know, messed up as far as being established as something here. So he's the one, again, he definitely needs to win this. They could easily get out of this, have John Cena win. He wins the briefcase. It makes perfect sense with his, you know, that will be his track to get to The Rock, depending on what happens with Rock and CM Punk. So you can easily get out of it that way, but then you've got to ask the question, well, what does it mean for Dolph Ziggler again? And it just, again, he needs the win badly here.
A lot of potential storylines that they could go with. A lot of different things they could go with. The one, obviously, is Ziggler wins, holds on to the briefcase. That's the simplest. You've also got the John Cena wins, and as noted, he uses the briefcase to challenge The Rock for WrestleMania after Rock wins the title from CM Punk. You also could do the deal where, let's say on the show today, you have John Cena win the briefcase. Actually, I'm sorry. Ziggler, let me think how you could do this. I got like 18 million possibilities I was thinking of going through my head. You could have...
That's one I wanted to ask you about, because depending on where the placement of this is, what if Dolph cashes it in before the Money in the Bank ladder match even happens?
That's what I was thinking. That's one of them, because you've got the Sheamus Big Show match before this match. So he could cash it in. You'd have to do the storyline, and they sort of have, where he feels it's completely unfair to have to put his briefcase on the line. He doesn't want to lose his chance at the title. So he'd cash it in before the match took place, and then you'd have the GM or whatever say that this match is still taking place, so now it is for the title! Although, you know, kind of seems like a throwaway to give a championship match away and not have promoted it. But you could always do that and have Cena fight for the title, and then Ziggler retains the title, or... You could even do John Cena wins a title and then Ziggler has to win it back on another show. Or you could even do a deal where, you know, you have, let's see how you could do this. John Cena wins the briefcase from Ziggler and then you could put it on the line at Royal Rumble. Ziggler wins the briefcase back, but both guys enter the Rumble and John Cena wins the Rumble. And then he's got a shot at Rock. There's a lot of different ways you can go. I don't know what it's going to be, and I don't even know if the way they're going to do it. Some of these ideas I've come up with, honest to God, they're not very good, I'll admit it. But because
do any of them end with unifying the titles at WrestleMania?
That is not, I'll just tell you this. I don't expect it to happen, but it's not out of the question that Rock and John Cena will be for both titles at WrestleMania. I don't expect it to happen, but I do know that I talked to someone who said that was not completely out of the question. So it has to have been broached at some point to unify both titles in that match. But I can come up with a lot of goofy ideas, some of which aren't great. But the reality is everybody's expecting that Rock and Punk are going to have a match at Rumble and Rock is going to win. And I know that Rock has pretty much been guaranteed the title. Doesn't necessarily mean it's actually going to take place on that show. And the more I say the words after Rock beats Punk, the more I think they're not going to do that. And so you got to look at alternate scenarios that will get a title, not even necessarily the WWE title, but get a title on Rock before WrestleMania and somehow get Rock versus John Cena set for a title at WrestleMania. And maybe the way they're going to do it isn't going to be the best. Maybe it's going to be a swerve that... The point I'm trying to make here is the simplest path to WrestleMania is most likely not what they're going to do. And what they do to try to keep us guessing may not actually make the most sense. But I would kind of expect something like that to happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if a monkey wrench got thrown into all plans today. And as noted, maybe Dolph cashes in and then the title's on the line in the Cena match and maybe Cena wins the title. Who knows? a lot of different ways you can go. Based on the fact that Ziggler has lost so many times to Cena on TV, maybe the most likely scenario is that Ziggler cashes in, wins the title, they have a ladder match for the belt, and AJ costs John Cena the win, and Ziggler retains. I think that's a perfectly likely scenario, but we'll see where they go. But a lot of interest, obviously, in this match, because a lot of ways that they can go.
Yeah, but you know what the tough part is? You know, we went through and gave them more scenarios than they're presenting on TV, and granted, you don't expect them to do all of those things, but they should do at least some of them with trying to create some drama and intrigue and questioning what could happen on Monday night. Obviously, you don't have to invoke the Rock name, but realistically, you could just very subtly by adding Cena into, the part he's played in Punk versus Rock and things like that. And it's, again, Monday was such a terrible way, I thought, to go home where, again, why are we seeing this show? And seeing Ziggler get, bounce off the ladder in the very first segment of the thing, it's not very awe-inspiring when it comes to his character.
All right, we've also got Big Show and Sheamus for the heavyweight title. Chairs match, and that suggests that the winner is going to beat the loser in a submission with chair shots, which could, in fact, set up Dolph Ziggler running in to cash in his briefcase. I never expected Big Show to get the title, but he's gotten the title. I think he's been awesome in the role. I know that they have tentative WrestleMania plans that involve Sheamus as champion. Doesn't mean he needs to win it back tonight. He can win it back anytime between now and WrestleMania. So, I don't know. The thing is, I don't think it really matters what they do here if Ziggler doesn't cash in. I like Big Show as champion. Obviously, Sheamus is going to get the title back at some point. When is the right time? I don't know. I don't really think it matters all that much. But it should be all right. Their best match involved a lot of kicking out of finishers, which obviously you can't really do in a chairs match. I guess you can. But really, this is all about trying to get a hold of a chair and then beating each other with it. So I think it'll be all right. I don't expect it to be a show stealer.
Yeah, kind of surprised me a little bit when Big Show got the belt, too, although it was getting to the time for Sheamus to lose it to someone, and it made sense for it to be Big Show. I think in a more perfect world, just because Sheamus did have a long reign and you don't have to get the belt off of Big Show so fast, I would actually have Big Show go over. But again, when you look up and down this card, it's not going to be, heel after heel after heel winning. So I'll actually go with Sheamus getting the Duke here and getting the title back.
Did you see the Big Show interview where he talked tag team psychology?
Yeah, that was a real surprise because I heard you talking about it. It's up on the website right now. It's the talking to Rosenberg or whoever it was in the Hot 97 studio. I thought that the entire 20 minutes was great, and him being annoyed by something that, and he's not the only one. A lot of guys have said the exact same thing, and I thought by far that was the most refreshing thing of the week anyone had said about anything.
Big Show's a hero. If you haven't seen the video, it's up at WrestlingObserver.com. Click on the videos tab. You can find it. But he so understands his business. He's a great babyface. He's a great heel. I was watching SmackDown, and we've seen very little of Dean Ambrose in WWE. But I've seen him in developmental. I've seen him in Dragon Gate. I've seen him work the indies. And the one thing about Dean Ambrose is you never see him playing pro wrestler. He's always Dean Ambrose. You wonder if a guy walks around in real life doing that with his hair, he's doing a very good job. He's doing a very good job bringing some reality to his character, and he's got a very natural air about him. And the Big Show does as well. Big Show never comes across as a guy who is playing pro wrestler. You believe him when he's a jolly giant, and you believe him when he's a guy that wants to punch you out and kill you. And I'm just a huge fan of Big Show, and I'm glad he's getting his due here in his 40s. We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and available TuneIn Radio app. If you download the app for your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app, you can search for Sports Byline USA, listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, including this show every Sunday, and archives of this show available as well. Archives available up at WrestlingObserver.com as well. We have a subscription area. We got a lot of free stuff at WrestlingObserver.com. You should head up there and check that out. But if you sign up for $10.99 per month, daily radio shows. We have shows every single day on the website, sometimes several shows per day. I've had a couple of days of late where I have done 5 shows in a single day. I know that sounds like a lot, but you don't have to listen to all of them. But there's something for everybody at WrestlingObserver.com. If you're into pro wrestling, if you're into mixed martial arts, Japanese pro wrestling, the history of pro wrestling, pretty much every conceivable subject matter that involves dudes hitting each other is available for you at WrestlingObserver.com. And not only to get all of the new shows, but every single show that we have done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. That's thousands of hours of audio, all of it available to you for $10.99 a month. Christmas time, great time to get a present for yourself or a friend or loved one. So go up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You can get a sample by scrolling down the right-hand side of the page. These are not shoddy podcasts. Very good audio quality. It's pretty much exactly the quality that you're hearing on this program here. So if you love this show, I guarantee you, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. It's very cheap. It's very easy to access. You can get all the shows on your iPod, your iPhone, your Android, whatever you listen to shows on. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We are here previewing the TLC pay-per-view, which is coming up this afternoon. We'll talk about the TNA pay-per-view from last week a little bit later on as well. And running down the matches, also for a title, Antonio Cesaro and R-Truth for the U.S. title. Mike, your thoughts on that particular battle?
Well, actually, before that, just back to Big Show for a minute on that interview. He also said two things in there, too, I thought were really telling. One was he and John Cena not calling anything going out there. They just, they had their finish, but they went out there and, again, and something that'll make the older school guys happy. And it's something, again, very simple. And then that's the other thing. He talked about, the simple storyline and the simple, I am a giant. I beat people up. It's an easy story to tell. Said, don't make things so difficult. It's not that hard. And I think those are two things that a lot of times some of the older guys who are retired and who have been out of the business for a while or come from that other era, fans today don't necessarily want to hear that. But, when Chris Jericho or Big Show or somebody like that says it, they tend to listen. So, again, big credit to the Big Show because I don't know what that show is usually about or anything like that, but him taking those 20 minutes to actually, talk very frankly about things was again, very, very refreshing. As far as R-Truth and Antonio Cesaro go, again, this is, it's in another era, they wouldn't have had this three-match series take place on pay-per-views, and, it's been kind of odd and wonky how this has happened, but R-Truth has been around for a long, long time, and he's quite familiar with the indie scene as well as being in WWE and in TNA, which he's done now since, it's been a long time. It's been since at least 2000 he's been in one of those two major promotions. So it's been a good way to get Cesaro bridged into a better position. They haven't messed with him at all or anything like that. But it doesn't make much sense at all for him to lose. I mean, obviously he does not need the belt as long as they get behind him and make him keep behind him, keep talking about his power and things like that and hyping him up. He doesn't necessarily need the belt, but it wouldn't be a good idea to me for him to lose it to R-Truth.
I don't know what kind of plans they have, long-term plans, if they even have any, but it seems that the idea is that Antonio Cesaro will eventually drop the title to someone who is not an American. Or, it depends on how you read the statement that he says no American can beat him. I don't know if that's leading to an American proving that he can beat Antonio Cesaro, or if it's if it is an indication that a non-American is going to beat him. Since no American can beat him, well, someone who's not an American can beat him. So, be a guy like Sheamus or something like that, who knows. But I think the match is
some
going
other
to...
people are just thinking Justin Gabriel or Santino, which that wouldn't be good.
Justin Gabriel would, well, they'd have to really... they'd really have to push him. Or, hey, Tyson Kidd, not an American. And yeah, he got a big win on SmackDown in an eight-man. So, anyway, long story short, don't expect Antonio Cesaro to lose tonight. I don't think he should. I think he's awesome. I think that the WWE product of late, with all of the new guys coming in, I think it's Raw has sucked. Largely because it's just too long. And a great example was the Antonio Cesaro match on Monday night. I thought it was a really good match, but I talked to people and they were like, that match was boring. And to me, the reason they thought it was boring was not because it was actually boring, but because after you've been watching that show for 2 hours and 15 minutes, anything is boring. And they've got to remove that third hour. I don't want to debate it here because we've debated it 8 million times. It's not even a debate. It's unanimous. It's too long. But I think that if you take away the length of the show, which just to me kills that product. I mean, they've got some really good characters. I love Antonio Cesaro. I think that the Shield has been doing great. Big Show entertains me half to death. Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow are absolutely awesome. Especially Damian Sandow of late has been tremendous. Cody Rhodes and his mustache. There's a lot of good stuff in WWE. It's just that it's really hard to enjoy it when it's a chore, when it becomes a chore to get through 3 hours of Raw. So hopefully something can happen in the new year and they'll eliminate one of the hours of Raw, take things back to normal. But it just kind of is disappointing that there's a lot of good stuff there that it's difficult to enjoy because it's an Iron Man match to get through Raw.
Yeah, I mean, I made it 20 minutes, I think. It was after Ziggler did the bump, and I forget what came out next. I stopped watching and then went back on Tuesday and then fast-forward through the commercials and did all that with the DVR. It is incredibly painful to stand through and watch. Now, at least one of the... if there's silver linings in the black clouds, one of them is they are giving longer to matches, not because they should or it's the right thing to do, but they need to fill time, and Cesaro's been a beneficiary of that, which has been good. So, yeah, I'm with you, and I'm with everybody else on the planet. It is way too long. I think they know it's too long. It's just a matter of what they do with that hour. Hopefully, they, for their own good, they retain it. It's just they have to do either something at the beginning or something at the end, either go 8 to 10 or go 9 to 11, and they have to fill that 8 to 9 hour with anything related to WWE programming where you don't actually have to watch it and burn out your crowd.
We've got Kofi Kingston and Wade Barrett for the Intercontinental title. As you noted earlier in the show, if you look down the lineup here, it makes the most sense for the heels to win in literally every scenario. Except Big Show and Sheamus. I guess you could do a switcheroo there. But Wade Barrett should beat Kofi. Dolph Ziggler should beat Cena. The Shield should beat Team Hell No and Ryback. Cesaro should beat R-Truth, and Team Road Scholars should beat Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara. So, obviously, some of these aren't going to happen. And one of them is perhaps Kofi's going to beat Wade Barrett, and then Wade wins the title on television. I think that's a possibility. And it kind of is a screw job, but kind of not. But in the Dolph Ziggler-John Cena match, I mean, you could do a deal conceivably where if you want to send the people home happy... I wouldn't put this match on last, but you do a deal where Ziggler cashes in, as we talked about earlier, against a Big Show Sheamus winner. He wins the title, and then there's like a big argument, and it comes out that both guys signed a contract for a ladder match with the Money in the Bank briefcase hanging above the ring, and not for the title. And so therefore, there is no title on the line in the ladder match. And you can give John Cena the win, but he doesn't get the title. And then they do a rematch, obviously, for the belt on Raw or something like that, that Ziggler can win when AJ turns or whatever. I mean, you could go that direction as well.
Hey, it would give you something at the Rumble, too, for John Cena to do. I mean, obviously, then they may or may not be in the last 30, but leading into the Elimination Chamber, again, that's not a bad idea.
So, as I was noting, I think because of the preponderance of heel wins, if you look at who should win, Wade Barrett very easily could be beaten here by Kofi.
Doesn't make it. I mean, he's already been beaten in short order, and granted, it was supposed to be a flash thing. But 2 weeks ago or whatever it was when Vicky Guerrero and Vince McMahon came out and they had the quick roll-up for R-Truth, I thought that was ridiculous. But I guess one of the positives in that is thinking, okay, again, what do they get out of? Yes, Barrett could lose this, but what do they get out of that? It's not like Kofi Kingston, and I like Kofi, but it seems to be every time he teeters on the edge of, you know, as far as being serious and actually becoming a believable guy to take it to the next level. And Ross tried to do that on commentary, and they tried to do this wildcat thing and stuff like that. You know, unless he's going to be that all the time and stop worrying about, you know, again, just being Kofi Kingston and just being a, you know, a little bit more serious, that's the only thing. If they're going to do that, that's fine. But otherwise, that's absolute insanity when you have Wade Barrett there. I mean, what are you trying to prove a lesson to Wade Barrett to if you have him lose tonight when he should be one of the guys that you are on your knees in the fact that you have him in the company and you have a future because he's legitimate in the real deal and, again, is one of those people that I think fans will be able to love when he's a good guy and absolutely hate when he's a bad guy. So to me, it would be just moronically nuts for him to lose tonight.
I would argue that I don't think that he should lose, but I don't think it matters all that much, especially if you do something. You could even do a goofy finish of some sort where, like, a double pinfall and Kofi retains, whatever. But you get Kofi, you get his hand raised so people cheer. And then on Raw, you announce that on main event this week, the new main event is Kofi Kingston and Wade Barrett for the title in a rematch. And you change the title on TV. The main event show is... I don't want to say it's not doing well, but it's at about the station average. And it's probably costing a lot more than what you could toss on the station on ION and get the same rating and do better ad rates. So that show needs to do better numbers. And you've got to make it a show where things happen. And granted, changing the Intercontinental title on main event, honest to God, doesn't mean anything to anything above the 0.8. But you could try. And you can make the show seem worthwhile by having a major title change take place on that show, or at least a minor title change.
There's another one of the points that you've made, too, about oversaturation in the 2 hours, how it affects everything else. Even if you get through the 3 hours, even if you do it via having a DVR, odds are you are not watching 2 hours of SmackDown, an hour of main event, Saturday Morning Slam, and anything else that they may possibly have on, including the 24/7 stuff. Again, it's not just us who's saying this, like we're beating down on WWE. It's pretty much across the board that once you're done with Raw, you kind of just want to decompress and not even think about wrestling for the rest of the week. And that's, again, it's not just the wrestling fan saying that, it's the average person too.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we still have more matches to discuss, including the Tag Team Number One Contenders match and the pre-show Battle Royal with the women, which actually is coming up quite soon. So that's coming up after the break. And obviously, a lot of talk about the UFC shows this past weekend as well in Hour 2. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, who's doing a fine job today. We're discussing the WWE TLC pay-per-view, and we've got a couple of matches still to discuss and very little time here in this segment. So we'll do one here, and we'll do one in the short segment after we come back from the top of the hour break. Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara against Team Rhodes Scholars. Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow for the tag team championship number one contender spot. Mysterio is coming back. He's been out for about 3 weeks or so. They're saying it was personal issues at home. I had been told that he's tweaked his knee doing a dive off the apron. Regardless, he's back. He's teaming with Sin Cara. This is another match where Team Road Scholars really should win this match, but A lot of heels maybe going over on this show, so this could also be one of those switcheroos where Mysterio and Sin Cara end up taking it. I know that at one point there was a number one contenders match that Mysterio and Sin Cara won. Now they're apparently having to put it back on the line, so now it's like UFC. You win the number one contendership and have to defend it repeatedly. But hopefully Cody's mustache and the great Damian Sandow win, but honest to God, it don't matter.
It will only matter if they find that shirt that John Morrison was wearing when Eli Cottonwood was wrecking shop on NXT. You know, the one that just says mustache, and they break that out somehow, and they're able to sell that, and everyone can, they give one out to everyone in the arena. That's how powerful Cody Rhodes' mustache apparently is. Yeah, Teams Rhodes Scholar should win this. They've actually been great, and there's a lot more that they can do with this. Nothing against Mysterio or Sin Cara. It would not make much sense with the position that they're in now for Team Rhodes Scholars not to win. Although, again, looking up and down the card, even if Team Rhodes Scholars does lose this, they can easily win again on Monday night and get that out of the way. So I just think the most important thing here is that we keep Cody Rhodes' mustache healthy and push to the level it can be.
Someone asked why I was fixated with wrestlers' facial hair, and I'm not the one that started a Cody's Mustache Twitter, nor am I the one that starts Cody's Mustache Chance at shows. We'll talk about that after the break. Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Other options, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794 is available every single Sunday, as well as the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. TuneIn Radio app, search for Sports Byline USA. You can listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, including this show, as well as archives of this program as well. Plug it into your car, you can listen on the road. A lot of great stuff there on the TuneIn Radio app. We're talking the WWE TLC pay-per-view. It's coming to you in an hour, immediately after the show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer will be doing live running play-by-play of the show on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the last hour previewing the show. One more match to talk about. It is Layla Caitlin, Alicia Fox, Natalia, Tamina, Oksana, Rosa Mendez, Sana's Little Helper Battle Royal for the Divas Championship. AJ Lee was originally in this match, and then they took her out and put Cameron and Naomi in, which is why I think that perhaps AJ plays a bigger role in the show, perhaps in the Ziggler-Cena match, costing Cena the match. But winner gets the number one contendership. Who do you give it to, Mike?
Cody Rhodes' mustache, obviously.
What?
Well, I think that... Actually, you know what? I take it back. Now that Cody Rhodes is off the market, he married that announcer that was in Florida there for a while in FCW. So I guess Cody Rhodes and his mustache completely off the market. And you said before the break, too, you know, people questioning you about Cody Rhodes' mustache. Look, he looked like, I think, Ed O'Neill from Married with Children was in this movie Little Giants with Rick Moranis, where he was kind of playing this Mike Ditka-type character. That's exactly what Cody Rhodes is. You give him some aviator sunglasses, he's every cheap bad guy chewing on the gum that was out of, like, an 80s, like, movie that had Tom Cruise in it. I mean, I'm telling you, Cody Rhodes, mustache.
My God, have we got a lot to talk about when we come back from the next break. Back in a moment, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here as we are every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Before the break, for those of you just tuning in, I asked Mike who's going to win the Divas Battle Royal. Layla, Caitlin, Alicia Fox, Natalia, Tamina Snuka, Oksana, Rosa Mendez, Cameron, and Naomi. And he responded, Cody Rhodes' mustache!
You know, at one time... You
more information!
That Cody Rhodes' mustache would have been the winner in a match like that, but I won't go anywhere there other than to say because I'm a fan of Layla, I would say Layla wins this. Although, does it really matter? Who's the champion right now anyway? It's still Eve, correct?
It is Eve.
Hmm. See, it should be, well, I don't know. I guess Eve's still being a bad girl. Let's go with Layla, even though, really, if you look at it, probably Tamina should be the one winning this.
I vote, are you ready for this? Naomi.
Yeah, she... But does anyone know her from being anything other than Brodus Clay's dancer?
No, but now's her chance. They need women. And we've gone through all of these women feuding a million times. Naomi hasn't had a chance yet, and she can work. It's not like Brodus Clay is a hot act right now.
This is true, you know, even though he's the only one who still gets pyro. But yeah, Naomi, coming off of FCW, or not FCW, but NXT when she was on there, and I think ultimately lost to Caitlyn in the final. But yeah, she is one where it doesn't make much sense that she's just dancing when they need women incredibly badly. So I'd be completely fine with that.
What are your thoughts on Raw this past Monday night, besides the preposterous length of the show?
Just the fact that I didn't think it was a very good go-home show. I just, again, and it being so painful to watch, it didn't do much for me as far as being all that exciting or being something where it's like, well, now I want to spend $50 on the pay-per-view this weekend. I mean, again, you're relying when we started. I kind of forgot it was tonight. For some reason, in the back of my mind, like, well, they got an extra week of build. No, they don't. It's tonight, and they didn't do a very good job driving that home.
You know, I'm impressed, obviously, with the fact that John Cena and Big Show can go and do a match without having anything but a finish. But with that said, their match was really boring on Raw.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, and if that was just in the span of 2 hours, it's like everything, you know, you're talking about the Kofi match earlier on. It's nothing against those guys. It's just, yes, it wasn't the most exciting match in the world, but if you weren't subjected to so much before leading up to that, it wouldn't have been as bad. Now, one thing I did kind of like at the end and found interesting was when they were going off the air, Ryback and Roman Reigns slamming into each other. It wasn't Ryback clearing the ring or anything like that. It was he and Roman Reigns, like, you know, two big bulls slamming up against each other, and Ryback shoving them, you know, up against the ropes, and Reigns has got his hand in Ryback's face, and I thought that came off really well at the end, in that it was just a bunch of guys slamming into each other. I thought that turned out okay, so that wasn't a bad way to end the show. It was just getting to that point with it being so long and having, like, the Miz, again, there were some amusing parts of that Miz show, but he is, I've never liked him. It's hard for me to take him seriously. I know I'm an old, you know, man when it comes to, you know, do I think you can actually beat anyone up? And I've never thought about that about The Miz. You know, I never thought really that about Morrison and some other guys, too. But with The Miz, it really stands out, and he's an awful baby face. He's barely, to me, a good bad guy. And even though he gets some reaction, it's stuff like that that leads into the show just, again, I'm sorry it has to come back to the length of the show, but really, it always comes back to the length of the show. It's just way too painfully long, and it's dragging down things that would be okay, or at least be average. It drags them down because of the length of the whole thing.
Tell me more about your thoughts about The Miz.
That's pretty much it, and I don't think I'm in the minority on this. Like, maybe I am, but I've never really... He was just the reality guy off of MTV, and granted, he has come, you know, he has come a long way in leaps and bounds since he first started. They've gotten more out of him than I thought they could. He dresses the part well. He looks good the whole nine yards. But I think it was Lance Storm this week who said, you know, he would be my heel manager. And in another era, that's exactly what he would be. He'd probably be really good as an annoying heel manager, and he gets easy heat. And I think that would be fine. But as far as him as a regular wrestler on the show, it's awful, and with him supposedly in a babyface role, again, they're going to have to do a whole lot of convincing and a whole lot of work, far better than what they're doing right now to convince me that he's someone I'm going to want to, you know, give my money to.
If there was a Miz Cody Rhodes and Brodus Clay on one side of you and a hamburger on the other side, who would you go through to get that hamburger, Mike?
I'm going through The Miz.
That's what I thought.
Brodus would just reach back and take the hamburger, too. I'm way too impressed by Cody's mustache, and at least I know Cody actually wrestled a little bit. Whereas The Miz, you have no athletic background. You literally have a guy that's off a reality show, and I know in this era of the WWE that shouldn't matter, but as Big Show talked about this week, it still does matter. Why are we still in a ring then? Why are there ropes and a canvas mat and you're wearing trunks and all that stuff? You're still supposed to put on the fantasy and the idea that these two guys are in a competition to get to, and both are in each other's ways getting to a goal. And just, you've talked about a lot, everybody has, as far as that Miz talk show, and as far as him just being a smarmy baby face, it does not work.
I love when Damian Sandow said, "You're not a very good host, are you?"
He was right. He's a smart man.
Huge fan of Damian Sandow. Huge fan. All right, we got to talk a little bit about last week's TNA Final Resolution pay-per-view. Really not much to the show. I mean, if ever there was a show where you could conclude it was a show, that was this show. Bobby Roode and Jeff Hardy was the main event. Jeff Hardy beat him. He retained the title. We had Daniels beating AJ in a good match, not their best. We had Angle, Joe, and Garrett, and Wes Briscoe beating D-Von, Doc, and two Ace and Eights members. Kurt won. He got the pin. There was no turn. There was no revelation. So that seemed like a I paid money for something and I got nothing out of that one. Tara and Mickie James was a match. Austin Aries and Bully Ray was very good until a horrible finish with Brooke Hogan running in and ruining the match. Joey Ryan and Matt Morgan against Chavo and Hernandez was absolutely nothing to speak of. Rob Van Dam and Kenny King, very sloppy. And then Kazarian and James Storm had a house show match. So very, very, very underwhelming.
I think the best news coming out of TNA this week was Danny Davis getting FaceTime, being a Joseph Parks trainer.
That's right. Joseph Parks in Ohio Valley, TNA's developmental territory. Being trained by the owner of Ohio Valley, Danny Davis, and apparently more to come. So we shall see if he can run the ropes, I guess, soon. Which, actually, based on his previous matches, he can't. So hopefully Danny Davis works on that with him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, it wasn't a bad show, but if you missed it, you didn't miss anything. I just, Daniels and AJ, obviously it's not, even though they said it's going to be the last time, it's not going to be the last time. And I thought that match was actually, again, they didn't do anything revolutionary or anything like that. And it was, a little bit more formulaic than their last match where they actually did some new stuff in that Falls Count Anywhere, I think it was, match. Or Last Man Standing match, I think it was. But, yeah, it looked to be the best thing on the show, and it definitely was the best thing on the show.
And really, it was only about a 3-star match, so.
Yeah, that's it. They try to do RVD and Kenny King again on Thursday, which, I don't know if Kenny King made the right move going over to TNA. I mean, I get it, but Rob Van Dam's got to have a match with a guy that can have that Rob Van Dam kind of match. He's going to do his things, and it's not going to look very crisp and clean sometimes. And, when you got a guy who can trade in and out there with him, some of those shots don't look so bad, and some of that sloppiness is a little bit removed, but I don't know what they're going to do with the X Division title. They got to
hold
get
that
off
thought. We'll be right back. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also hear us on Sirius 794, as well as the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search for Wrestling Observer Live or Sports Byline USA on the TuneIn Radio app every Sunday, and you can listen to us live on your phone. That's obviously a great way to listen to the program. And before the break, Mike was on a roll talking the X Division title. when I rudely cut him off because I done heard the music. So, Mike, let's continue on with your rant.
Hey, my fault. No, I just haven't missed a break that badly in a while. I guess I was due, but no, I mean, they have more guys like Kenny King than they do Rob Van Dam, and whether that's good or bad or not, I'll leave it up to you. But they have to get that X Division title off RVD. I don't see it doing him any good. And again, you know, in the Kenny Kings, the Zima Ions, and other guys like that, I think it's a title that they could use more, at least under that name. If they're going to have RVD continue on with it, I don't think there's many guys in that, you know, division or who would be, you know, positioned in that division who are going to have really good matches with him or anything like that. They're better off having him with other people. So the faster they get that X Division title off RVD, I think that'll probably make the most sense.
Let's talk about the WFC shows from this past weekend. We had Friday night, which was the Smashes UK versus Australia version of Ultimate Fighter with a Ross Pearson, George Sotiropoulos main event, and a lot of stories coming out of that show. I know almost none of you listening to this actually watched this season of Ultimate Fighter. I didn't as well, but the finale on FX was actually it was a very good show, and a lot of good fights. A lot of drama coming out of it in the sense that Ross Pearson after the show, of course, you're not allowed to talk about the season until the season is over. There's a non-disclosure agreement. I believe they still claim that you will be fined $5 million if you reveal anything that happened on the season before the season is over. Now that the season is over, they during the press conference afterwards, Pearson said that he hated George Sotiropoulos. He had no respect for him. And one of the main reasons was, during the season, him and George Sotiropoulos got into a war on Twitter. Which, right there, this is already preposterous. They got really mad at each other and were going back and forth on Twitter. And they're discussing this on the program. And Ross Pearson's boxing coach tried to calm them down. George Sotiropoulos, Ross Pearson claimed, punched Pearson's boxing coach, and boxing coach responded by knocking out George Sotiropoulos. And Pearson said that he found Sotiropoulos to be very disrespectful, very unsportsmanlike, and thus he had no respect for him and wanted nothing to do with him. And he went in there and he beat him up. TKO in the third round. I believe the fourth straight loss for Sotiropoulos, third or fourth. I don't know if we'll be seeing him around after this, but Ross Pearson wins the Battle of the Coaches, and quite the story there, particularly when you consider that Sotiropoulos getting KO'd during the filming of Ultimate Fighter, which, by the way, was off-camera, so it never aired. That probably affected his training, and he did not look good out there. He was an Australian hero, and he let him down in the main event. So I guess we'll see what the future holds for George Sotiropoulos.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised Ross Pearson's still so upset considering his boxing coach, well, if that story's true, knocked out Sotiropoulos. And I'm not saying it made it any easier for Pearson, but, you know, you get knocked out once, it's, you know, you're embarrassed on top of the fact you can't talk about it, you can't get it out, so you're living with that, and the fact you got knocked out. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be George Sotiropoulos, and or if it be Joe Stevenson, I think it was in 2010, the show in Sydney, and things were looking really good for him, and he had a couple fight of nights. He had one with Joe Lozon later on that year, but since then, Dennis Seaver, Rafael Dos Anjos, and Ross Pearson, and it's the third straight time he's been knocked out, if you include the story about the boxing coach. So, yeah, not very, very humbling, embarrassing night for Sotiropoulos, not only to lose in Australia, but then, you know, finding out afterwards what the deal was, because they hyped it up a little bit in the lead-up how Pearson was upset and, you know, he didn't like, you know, after he finally got a chance to meet Sotiropoulos, didn't end up liking him. And because they didn't see the season, I was figuring maybe it was something that stemmed from there. But then to find out in the post-fight press conference, it was about a conflict that took place. It's pretty humbling if you're Sotiropoulos, I think, right now.
Also, we had the two finales in the lightweight final. Norman Park of the UK beat Colin Fletcher. Fletcher is a guy, he's called Freak Show. He comes out wearing a mask. Very wacky. But he lost this via decision. 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. And Robert Whittaker of Australia beat Bradley Scott of the UK. Three scores of 29-28. Both good fights, very good fights. Probably nothing that if you saw it, you'll remember. Probably remember Freak Show just because of his look. But overall, a good show. There were some good fights. Hector Lombard was the Hector Lombard that everyone said he was, that he didn't show in his last fight. Destroyed Rusmar Palhares in the first round via TKO. These guys hit really hard. And that was a show. So some good stuff. And any final thoughts on this one, Mike?
No, just Igor Prokhorov getting knocked out by Joey Beltran. Or losing Joey Beltran, but it got beat up by him. It surprised me that fight actually didn't make it to the main card on FX. And again, I didn't have a chance to see the whole thing, but I'm surprised it wasn't scheduled to be on there. And then also Chad Mendez getting a knockout win in 155, and he's a guy I've been high on for a while. And again, it surprises me that he was on the undercard of that show, even though they still have to show it on Fuel and everything. I mean, his only loss was to Jose Aldo, and I still think, even though he won't be able to beat Aldo, you still get a lot more out of Mendez. So I'm a little bit surprised that he ended up on that show, but he keeps chugging on as well.
So we had another Ultimate Fighter finale last night, headlined by a battle of the not coaches. It was obviously supposed to be Roy Nelson and Shane Carwin. They were the coaches for the season. Shane Carwin suffered a knee injury, so it ended up being Roy Nelson and Matt Mitrione. And the big... the scandal about this fight was that Roy Nelson said, let's do VADA drug testing. Since obviously, if you've seen much of Roy Nelson, he's pretty clearly clean. Mitrione, who took this fight on somewhat late notice, about a month, 3 weeks or a month or so, he essentially said, I'm very busy, I got a lot to do, so no. And so Roy Nelson was like, look, I offered drug testing. There's nothing you have to do except, you know, pee. And it's a yes or no question. Will you be drug tested or not? And you said no. So everybody knows what that means, indicating that Mitrione is on drugs of some sort. And Mitrione was outraged, not outraged enough to actually do it, but outraged. And they went in there for the fight, and Mitrione looked pretty good, all things considered. His stand-up has improved. He's just starting late. And Roy Nelson has been around forever. Although, as was noted after the fight ended, Roy Nelson has only been training stand-up since 2009. And now he's known. He's never even gotten a submission in UFC, despite being an amazing grappler who actually beat Frank Mir years ago in a grappling battle. Lost to him in an actual fight years later when Mir just threw him around. But... he went in there, and Matt Mitrione decided to stand right in front of him and got knocked out for his troubles. Roy Nelson looking impressive against a guy who stood right in front of him and was taking the fight on short notice, but still a big win for Roy Nelson.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe him in that. Him saying he hasn't trained stand-up, only started in 2009, considering he's been fighting for, God, what? I don't even know how long now, at least 670. I don't know how long he's been training for now, but it's been a long time, so I'm sure he did it far before that. But he was able to at least keep that storyline going. And Mitrione, it was just a easy carryover from having Carwin around and his claims against him. So he was able to keep the same storyline going as he's becoming the Floyd Mayweather of MMA. Everybody's on something, and obviously there certainly people are, but he seems to have added it into a part of a gimmick, which, again, I don't know if that makes Uncle Dana very happy, but, doesn't really matter. When you land punches like that, who cares? So, yeah, it's not a super impressive victory or anything like that, in that he should be beating Matt Mitrione with the amount of experience and everything that he has and those heavy hands, so... Not super impressive or anything, but Yeah, I thought it was a good show. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but a good show from top to bottom. It was fun viewing.
You know, I don't know about the 2009 story, but I will say that if you're a guy who is a really good grappler and you're a heavyweight and you've got a good wrestling base and you're facing non-UFC level competition, just maybe some wins on the local circuit or whatever. I mean, it's very possible that you could go in there and get inside, take people down, and submit him, which is what he actually did for several years of his career. Of course, the story kind of falls apart when you think about the fact that he was in the IFL and he won many IFL fights via knockout or TKO long before 2009. So
even if he wasn't a big training in striking, he had better striking than any of those guys, which means he knew something.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to win the IFL Heavyweight Grand Prix and the IFL Championship via KO, but not have ever done any training in stand-up. But that's the story. We're going to head to a break. When we come back, more UFC. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. And we are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, as well as Sirius XM Channel 794, and the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Get the TuneIn Radio app, search for Sports Byline USA. You can listen to all of the great Sports Byline programming, including this show and archives of this show. And, of course, WrestlingObserver.com. Show streams every Sunday. Replays are up at WrestlingObserver.com as well. You can head over to the right-hand side of the page and see the latest 4 free radio shows. And if you like what you hear, I've said it a million times, $10.99 a month, full access to radio shows every single solitary day. Sometimes as many as 5 shows in a single day. Every show we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is available in the archives. And I'm not just talking Wrestling Observer Live. I'm talking 5 shows a day sometimes. All of those go to the archive. We have thousands and thousands of radio shows, thousands of hours of audio in the archives right now. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. You can follow your favorite pay-per-views. Go back and let's just say you saw something on 24/7, maybe TLC 2009. Hey, jump into the archives. You can find our review of TLC 2009. It's available in the archives right now. All of that stuff only for subscribers. It's $10.99. Try the free shows on the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com. And if you like what you hear, I guarantee you, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So, Christmas season, check it out for yourself, for a friend, or a loved one, and you will not regret it. We're talking the UFC pay-per-view. UFC on FX, actually, from last night. I'm very confused, everybody. We've had 3 shows, actually, between the 2 UFC events on FX, ROHI pay-per-view, and the TLC pay-per-view is about to start. So a 4 big show weekend is out of control. But let's continue our talk of UFC on FX. Anything you'd like to add for Nelson and Mitrione, Mike?
No, not really on the main event there, other than, you know, again, Mitrione actually looked good physically. He looked good in the whole nine yards. But as you said, he's 34. You think about Roy Nelson looks like Father Time, and he's had a lot of time in, but he's 36. You compare that to Mitrione's 34. And again, you know, Mitrione could make his way up and be, you know, again, with his personality and with his charisma, he's a guy and running so many shows, you can get some good use out of it. It's just too bad that, you know, he's 34 and not 24.
The fact that Roy Nelson is younger than me is impossible.
Scary, and that's only a couple months, but still.
Roy Nelson looks like he'd be my father. He looks like he ate my father.
It's true. In that beard, which I used to make fun of that beard, and I noticed in the mirror that I have a little bit of gray coming into mine as well. Not necessarily like Roy's, but very depressing.
Oh, my God. Mike Ricci and Colton Smith for the welterweight championship. Colton Smith just kind of ruined this guy on the ground. He just didn't let him move. He destroyed this guy grappling. He got him to the ground, and then it was just like Mike Ricci could not get this dude off of him. And Mike Ricci trains with GSP and all of the guys up at TriStar. He's a very good fighter. But Colton Smith, active military, Army Ranger, I believe. He just absolutely slaughtered this guy on the ground. Three rounds, 30-27, 30-27. One judge gave the second round a 30-26 when it appears that Colton Smith dominated every single solitary second of that round. There was an awesome comeback by Mike Ricci with about 20 seconds left. It lasted about 10 seconds, and then Colton Smith got his back again, and it was over. Colton was just in another level as far as grappling, and he is the new welterweight champion of The Ultimate Fighter, and will be getting a shot in UFC. Mike Ricci, both guys fought at 170 for the season. Both guys moving to 155. Dave seems to think Mike Ricci for sure is getting a deal, but they got a lot of fighters, and they haven't hired anybody new in months and months and months. And he didn't win, and not only did he not win, he was just eaten up by Colton Smith. So I guess we'll see if he gets another shot. He probably will, but I don't know. He did not look like a guy who was going to be able to hang with 155-pounders anytime soon.
Yeah, I never really got a chance to see the show, so I was just going off of hype and reputation and what people were saying leading into it, which was, you know, again, Ricci, as you talked about, his training with George St. Pierre at TriStar, and the fact that UFC is high on him, and people who were in that camp have been very high on him, and what his future could be, and not really knowing Colton Smith and who he was, I was kind of surprised in the way, because again, George St. Pierre and his style, and Rory McDonald coming off of that, you know, was kind of more gassed up by the gym going into it and believing in that a little bit more, and thinking that Ricci would be able to do something, and Smith just dominated him, obviously, but as you can tell by the scores, the entire time. So very interested to see, you know, Colton Smith is probably going to move on now and be, you know, on fuel shows and things like that for the time being. So it'll be interesting to see his progress. It'll be interesting to see also, as you said, will Ricci be getting a deal, because they are so rich with talent at those lower weight classes.
Pat Barry, who is an awesome man, very charismatic, he destroyed Shane Del Rosario in the second round. First round, he kind of got eaten up a little bit on the ground. Del Rosario took him down and went for a number of submissions. Pat Barry managed to not be submitted by anything. And in the second round, he just destroyed this guy. He hit him so hard and knocked him out 26 seconds into the second round. Did a great promo afterwards. Very charismatic guy. It's tough when you're a guy like this who could be a megastar, but you're not a fighter at the megastar level. And I guess we'll see what they do with Pat Barry. I mean, I don't see him being a contender for the heavyweight title or really even close, but he needs to fight all the time and just be awesome.
Yeah, it's, you know, love his charisma. As soon as you said that, I thought about him and Mirko Krokop driving around in a car singing California Dreaming, which was just surreal to see, and I'm sure it's up on YouTube there. Barry's just a guy. He is charismatic, but he is, again, running so many shows and being a guy that people like and always having the ability to either get knocked out or knock someone out. He's certainly got a place. I'd be more interested to see what they're going to do with Del Rosario, and you don't want to give, you know, if there's any startup groups out there that come in the wake of Strikeforce or Bellator, you don't want to really give them any guys, especially because you have so many. But I think the better question is, what are you going to do with Del Rosario? Because you could keep him on there, but it would just seem to be you're keeping a guy just to have a guy. And because, again, he got lucky over LeVar Johnson, trapping him in an armbar in Strikeforce. And since then, he's been, you know, waylaid by Miocic, and now with Barry. And you know where Barry stands on the list of importance as far as his skill goes. So, you know, there's always going to be a place to me for someone like Pat Barry. But for a guy like Del Rosario, and granted, he's a kickboxer, but he should have been able to do more with Barry on the ground the first round. And he would, you know, he let Barry get away, and then, you know, just eating the overhand left, and then the two rights in the, and then I guess it was another left in the second round. I mean, a brutal knockout, and I don't foresee his future being long in UFC because I just don't know what you can do with him other than to keep him around as a body.
We also had a, let's see, Jonathan Brookins and Dustin Poirier. Poirier submitted him with a Darce choke from the bottom in the first round, which was sweet justice for Poirier, who got darced himself in his last fight. And it was fun while it lasted. And Poirier looked good.
Yeah, he looked real good. You know, he landed some good shots up against the cage and, you know, kind of forced Brookins to try to drop down to get a takedown. But Poirier just you know, got that choke right away and maneuvered his body and got the submission. And, you know, again, I don't think Brookins should be too upset. Obviously, you got to be upset he you know, got caught that way, especially in the first round. But, you know, that was a fun little fight for as long as it lasted, and I think that was kind of the one big thing as far as the, you know, almost all the matches on the show, and they had a chance to show a lot of the prelims because of the way the matches went, where it was just, you know, some really good quick stoppages in the first round that really fired up the crowd, it seemed to be. And again, not a huge crowd or anything like that. It's probably, what, 2,500 people fit in the Hard Rock, but
that's exactly how many people were there, in fact, 2,500 people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tiny building. It's you know, it's not even, like, you think of an auxiliary off one of these casinos or something like that. It's not. It is literally a room, like, you know, almost ballroom style, like you would have for the small boxing shows.
And in an amazing battle, wasn't really even a battle, but it was amazing, Rustam Khabilov in his UFC debut against Vince Pichel. Khabilov got behind him, trapped one arm, and gave him a German suplex right onto his head. Vince Pichel got back up, and Khabilov refused to let go of his body lock, lifted him up, German suplex right onto his head. Second one. Khabilov would not release the body lock. Vince Pichel apparently could not even turn around. He was trapped in this body lock. Khabilov lifted him up and backdrop driver German suplexed him right onto his head a third time. Apparently knocked him out. I don't even know. Last night I said this was awesome. And visually it was awesome. But I don't like seeing dudes dropped on their heads like this. It really sucked for Vince Pichel. But not every day do you get to see three German suplexes. Multiple German suplexes to finish in a UFC fight, and that's what we got. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was literally like a Japanese wrestling finish, too, because, you know, it was about 90 seconds in, he got the first one, and you could tell Pichel was busted up then, but, you know, he gets back up, and then 15 seconds later, boom, you know, right back down, the one on his head, brutal, and then 30 seconds later, you know, I finally got that final KO one, but... Yeah, they're probably going to have to think about something. What's going to be difficult is the intent, calling the intent on it, because, you know, pile drivers are already illegal, but suplexes being a part of Sambo and being a part of amateur wrestling, it's just one of those things, and obviously if a guy trying to squirm out and get away could be up in the air, and it's just... It's one of those things that, unfortunately, again, it's just going to be a part of the sport, even though, you know, you don't want to see that happen, and shots to the back of the head are illegal. Why wouldn't these be? But you're starting to change up. You'd be changing up the sport then a little bit, and I think it would be interesting. I don't know how you would be able to have MMA and to have slams without having those types of suplexes. I don't see how you could do it.
So it is official. It is going to be GSP versus Nick Diaz. What are your thoughts?
And I'm a Diaz guy, but I wouldn't have done this fight. I would have done GSP and Hendricks first. You have something made right there. It's not like Diaz is, you know, somebody's hurt or Hendricks didn't look good or something like that. I mean, you have a fight there, and I think they should have done this. Again, and now Hendricks is in a spot fighting on the same show. We got Rory McDonald and Carlos Condit, and then we also have Hendricks and brainlocking on who it is, but he's fighting. What if he loses? And that's, again, it's not fair.
Ellenberger.
The world isn't fair, but...
Jake Ellenberger.
Yeah, Ellenberger. So what if Ellenberger wins? And I know he can say he's in, you know, could be in the mix or something like that, but I think they're wasting a spot. There was no need to rush Diaz in there against GSP. Yes, it's going to do great box office in the whole nine yards, but with a good card, GSP and Hendricks would have did just fine, and we still would have had a fight that people want to see, because win or lose, I think GSP, people would want to see GSP, you know, shut Diaz's mouth or vice versa.
When we come back from the break, I got one thought on this whole situation, and then we shall wrap up the program. So stick around. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We got 2 minutes, so I want to very quickly say that in regards to the GSP-Nick Diaz fight, Dana White has indicated that this obviously is going to be a packed card in Montreal, and a number of welterweight battles on the show. And essentially the idea is that Johnny Hendricks is not getting a shot at GSP on that show, but he is on that show. And therefore, he is going to be in a training camp leading up to the next GSP fight. So, GSP has asked for this fight, and Dana White said, look, GSP is going to fight everybody in the division, but when you're as champion as long as he is, when you're the number one guy in the company, if you want to fight, every now and then you ask for it, you're going to get it. And that's what happened here. He wants Nick Diaz. But, obviously, Diaz very easily could screw this up, and in fact, I expect him to screw this up. And if that happens, guess what? Johnny Hendricks, trained, ready to go, step right in and take that fight. So I think that's the idea behind this show. They don't want this show to fall apart, and so it's welterweights up and down the card. So if one guy gets hurt, another welterweight can step in. If one match falls apart, another match can be put together. If two fights fall apart, the two guys that lost opponents can fight each other. And if something happens with Nick Diaz, bunch of welterweights can just jump right in and face GSP for the title. So I think that's kind of the appeasement there. And pretty much if Johnny Hendricks does win and Diaz and GSP goes as planned, he's going to get the next shot. So that's kind of the story there. But we're out of time. We'll obviously talk about this more with Mike next week, since we've got a lot of time before GSP and Diaz takes place. Don't forget, TLC is starting right now. Dave Meltzer, WrestlingObserver.com, live running play-by-play of the show. And then later on tonight, myself and Dave, brand new radio show only for subscribers. We'll be talking the entire TLC event, all the matches, all the angles, backstage notes, and tons more. It's going to be awesome. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back live next week with more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.